This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, everyone. This is a special replay of the 9/11 tribute episode we did a few years ago. Many of you have asked us to play it again, and we know we have many new listeners that have never heard it before. And Jamie and I and Jen feel it is very important not to forget what this day means.
What I did is put a special 9/11 tribute episode interviewing people from all over the horse world asking, where were you on 9/11? You can listen in today as fellow horse people tell their heartfelt stories of the day that changed the United States and the world. We asked for contributions from our listeners and people from around the horse world and put a lot of effort into putting this particular episode together. People seemed to really appreciate it last year, and I have received several emails now asking for a replay this year on 9/11, and we want to let you know that we don't forget, and we hope you don't forget as well. Our thoughts and prayers are still with the families of people who lost loved ones on that day and subsequently in the military since then. So get your tissues out. This is a replay of the special episode that we put together last year. I hope that you appreciate and enjoy it. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to a special commercial-free episode of Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for September 11th, 2012, episode 485. 11 years ago today, at this very hour, an event happened that changed the United States and the world. This special episode of Horses in the Morning honors those that died that day. Where were you on 9/11? We have heard from listeners and other horse people from around the country about their experiences and where they were on 9/11. We will share those stories with you today. Horse people are very compassionate people, and we will never forget the people that died that day and those that sacrificed their lives for others. May God bless them and their families.
Two airplanes have crashed into the World Trade Center in an apparent terrorist attack on our country.
I was lying in bed. All of a sudden, I heard what sounded like a plane or something coming extremely low, and then we just heard this shattering explosion. I ran up to the roof and confronted by this horror. There's a gaping hole. I can see the South Face, and there are flames. There are papers flying out of the windows, black flames. There are flames coming out of multiple floors.
Tomorrow, all the things were gone. I'd work for all
things
my life.
Things are really in chaos.
And I had to start again. Just my children and my
tons of people were running down Fulton Street.
Thank my lucky stars to be living here.
The World Trade Center is smoking.
Because the flag still stands for freedom.
Coming out of all sides.
And they can't take that away.
It's a symbol, I think, of our strength that we are the United States of America.
And I'm proud to be an American where at least I know I'm free. And I won't. The men who died, who gave that right to me, and I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
I looked out my windows to see what was going on, and the Second World Trade Center just went into flames. From 1 minute to the next.
I was actually talking to my brother on the phone about what happened. I was on my roof and I saw something from where I am. I really can't see what it is. I saw something go into the other building because from where I am, I could see the World Trade Center.
Smoke coming out of the top of the World Trade Center, both buildings now.
From the lakes of Minnesota.
Really horrifying.
To the hills.
We're just blocked away from the World Trade Center.
Across the plains of Texas.
Smoke and debris.
From sea.
Building literally began to collapse.
Detroit down.
The story is not over yet.
And New York to LA. Well, there's pride in every American
heart, and it's time we stand and say.
Just a moment ago, we saw a huge amount of flames.
That I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
We don't know what's going to happen next.
And I won't forget the man who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. Because there ain't no doubt I love this land.
Smoke was just going in the air.
God bless the
before us, there was debris falling, I'd say, at least three-quarters the height of the building.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the man who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
I am with Lori from Arkansas. Now, Lori, you were in a little bit different place than the rest of us. Tell us about your experience and where you were on 9/11 when you heard the news.
Well, interestingly, on 9/11, I was living in the Middle East in a city called Erbid in Jordan, and had been there for, I don't know, I guess for about a year, and things were peaceful and quite, you know, typical. I was out going to the market. We were living very simple. We didn't have TVs. Many people there don't, and I had just left my home and was walking into the market, and some of the neighborhood kids were very excited and kind of running around, a little scared, and one of them stopped and told my son, who was then in first grade, and I, that America had just been bombed, and they continued running home. There was quite a bit of excitement in the streets and fear. You sensed fear, and I went into the little market by our house where a lot of people went and watched television, and we all were kind of gathered around. There were, you know, probably a dozen people from the streets that came into the store to watch. And the Twin Towers were there smoldering, and their news footage was rolling. And it was incredibly surreal to be in the Middle East and see that happening. No part of it felt like it could be possible or that it could be real. I can remember standing there watching that and just feeling completely bewildered and having a sense that I needed to go home.
What was the atmosphere with the locals in Jordan?
The locals there, definitely my feeling was that they were very fearful. There was a great sense of fear as to what the repercussions could mean for them. There were things in the news, you know, pointing in the direction of the Middle East.
Right.
I mean, immediately. So, and we all kind of know what's going on in the world and how things kind of tend to play out. And there just was this sense of, oh my God, something bad's going to happen.
Now, were you inclined immediately after that to want to go home, or did you stay in Jordan?
I started the procedures for going home very soon after that. It took a while. It wasn't a case of just hopping on a plane and going. But yes, I did feel the need to get home. It was quite disconcerting to have something as tremendously impactful as that occur and to be outside of your country.
One of the things I don't think I realized until we started doing the interviews for this is, you know, is how it was carried live throughout the world. Here you are in a little shop in Jordan watching on a TV set, probably CNN or a network like that, and you were watching it live.
Right.
I mean, that's not right. something you even think about living here in the United States. You know, we all knew we were all watching it live, but you didn't think about the rest of the world watching it live as well, including the Middle East.
Right. And the impact on, you know, your everyday person, people that I was around day to day were people just like me. They just happened to be in another country, people who were trying to get groceries and what's for dinner tonight and you know, how to pay the light bill. And just because they were happened to be in Jordan, that was their thoughts and feelings like any other average person and mine. And, you know, everything kind of came to a screaming halt that day with smoke billowing out of those Twin Towers.
Well, thank you so much, Laurie, for telling your story. And what an amazing story and what an amazing place to be at. And something I'm sure, like the rest of us, you'll never forget.
Exactly. That's for sure.
My name is Leslie Wiley. I'm the managing editor of HorseNation.com and a guest on Horses in the Morning each Monday. Where was I on 9/11? After sitting glued to the television with my college roommate all morning, I'd torn myself away to drive out to the barn to meet a reporter and photographer from our local newspaper who'd come out to do a story about me. I'd won the Pony Club National Dressage Championships a few weeks before, and I guess they thought it would be a good hometown girl, done good feature. What would have ordinarily been a fun brag session, however, on that particular day felt completely hollow. Everyone involved, I think, was going through the motions. The reporter asking me questions and pretending to be interested in my answers, the photographer asking me to paste a forced smile on my face, and me feeling totally ridiculous as I recounted the story of winning the championships, a victory that now seemed so trivial and meaningless in light of what was happening in New York City. It's a feeling that has haunted me over the years. Every time I hear a news story about starving children or a natural disaster or a war, this guilt over how much time and energy I invest in equestrian pursuits when there's so much suffering in the world. How can we justify our indulgence and pleasure when we're surrounded by so much pain? And I still don't have an answer. I just have to believe somehow that what I'm doing does have intrinsic value, that happiness in whatever shape it takes has meaning, that happiness is a gift we are meant to accept, that we enjoy our lives because that's what God wants. Ultimately, I think the best way to honor those who lost their lives on 9/11 is to continue living our own lives to the best of our ability, following our dreams, lifting up those around us, and seizing every moment of every day.
I'm here with Chris from Equestrian Collections to tell her story about where she was when she heard the news on 9/11. Chris, where were you?
I was actually at home, which I normally wouldn't be at that time. We'd spent the evening before we'd gone in to Washington to the Kennedy Center. I remember it was a two-part performance. One part was on the 10th, and the next part we had tickets to go back the day later. On the 11th, and we were coming back, and the route takes us right past the Pentagon, and it was all lit up, looks absolutely wonderful, and my husband and I had a little chat about, you know, what an amazing building it is, and he'd worked in the Pentagon, knew a lot of people from there, so we were just kind of chatting on, and off we went home. So it was late. It was gone midnight when we got in, so we were a little bit late. And I was just about to leave the house when the phone rang, and it was my brother down in Florida. And he said he'd just heard from my brother in London, and the news was breaking there, I guess. And he said, get on to the TV, put CNN on, and you know, see what's happening. Something's awful. It looks as though a plane has hit one of the towers at the World Trade Center. And at this point, obviously, we kind of just we put it on. It must have been a little before 9 o'clock, 8:45, something like that. And we were standing there, like everybody else, somewhat dismayed or shocked, looking at it and going, oh, my goodness, all those people. And then suddenly, of course, just after 9 o'clock, I think the other plane went into the second tower, and we realized it wasn't just something that was horribly wrong. It was something way beyond, I think, any, you know, anything that anybody had thought possible in the United States. So with that, I can remember, you know, saying, well, first thing, call the office. I knew people would be in there to say, go home, because obviously, you know, selling equestrian attire and things on a day like that just didn't make any sense. And I wanted everyone home. We didn't know what was going to happen next. We were so close to Washington, D.C. We were 24 miles away as the crow flies from the White House, where my home was, and also where my the office part of Equestrian Collections was. So, you know, we made that call. I think everybody obviously left right away, and you know, the next thing that we knew was President Bush came on, and then right after that we heard of the Flight 77 going into the Pentagon. And, you know, being around here, we all know people who work there, or we have staff who had relatives working in there, spouses working in there. So obviously that was, you know, you just felt the day couldn't get any worse than it was. And of course it did get worse and worse, but you know, that's kind of where we were, feeling extremely vulnerable, with, you know, family members calling from all over the country wanting to know whether we were okay, people from England calling, since I'm from England, wanting to know what was happening, were we all right, because we seemed awfully close to what was happening. So
we were in a bunch of same situation, because we had the horse stuff company then, and we had all the employees were sitting there watching the TV. We're all watching it together. One of the things that we haven't touched on yet in this show is how it affected the country. We really had no orders, and I think this was pretty much true for almost any kind of business.
Mm.
The orders just died for weeks. Same with you?
Yes. People just... obviously, you've got everything that you need, and I think it realigned what was important to everybody. It's obviously your livelihood is important to you, but I think everyone spent a lot of time checking in on their families and checking in, you know, trying to figure out if what was going to happen to horses, or people stranded with horses in strange places, and lots of people trying to get back into the United States when all the planes were grounded. A lot of them coming back where they had people taking care of their farms while they were on vacation. And, you know, that was the kind of thing that people were getting very concerned about. People that were stuck and not where they wanted to be, and having to, you know, come across country in cars, or just being stuck for, you know, seemed to be weeks on end. I'm sure it wasn't quite that, but trying to get back here was very, very difficult, especially for people who have animals and all of that. So we heard a lot of that, of those stories at the time. But yeah, it took a long time before business kind of got back to normal, if we ever got back to normal, and I don't think we really ever have, but... You pick up and you go on. And I think that was the other thing, was just a huge amount of inspiration that we all got from watching the people that did go in and help, and did go and risk their lives as well, and lost their lives going in to save other people. And then hearing the personal stories, especially around here, people who had lost relatives in the Pentagon. So we around here in the Washington, D.C., Northern Virginia area, I think we've felt it was very, very, very close to home for us.
I'm so numb, I can't feel anymore. Your love lives on inside of me, and I will hold on tight. It's not my place to question, only God knows why. I'm just jealous of the angels around the throne tonight. I've always made my troubles feel so small, and you were always there to catch me when I'd fall. Heroes come and go, well, God just took the only one I know. So I'll hold you as close as I can, longing for the day when I see your face again. But until then, just jealous of the angels around the throne tonight.
Was Jealous of the Angels by Jen Bostick. You can find all of her music at jbmusicfun.com. We received an email from somebody who is a friend of the Horse Radio Network who said that she could not get on because it would be too emotional to tell this story in person, and she asked that I read her email to you. This is from Karen. I grew up just outside the city, the other side of the TZ Bridge. My grandmother's Italian immigrant parents raised their family in New York City. My mother took the train into the city as a young girl. I often went to the city as a teenager. I could see the Empire State Building from my house on a clear day. The town I grew up in was home to many of the New York's finest, both police and firefighters. There is no place on earth like the Big Apple. It's part of me. I was at the office in Versailles, Kentucky, the day the towers came down, and my younger brother was working in Washington just around the corner from the Pentagon. I spent the morning alternately watching the devastation unfolding on TV and talking to my frantic parents and sister-in-law on the phone while trying to find out if my brother was alive. The cell service in D.C. was so disrupted, it was hours before he was able to connect with his wife. My husband was traveling internationally that day. He was on the phone trying to decipher what was going on. It was surreal watching the towers fall. I remember the event unfold on the small TV we had in the break room. Everybody was glued to the TV. All work came to a halt. The phones even stopped ringing. The room was silent. As the first tower began to fall, I slid down the wall I was leaning against and ended up sitting on the floor. Then the second tower came down. I didn't want to watch, but at the same time, I couldn't look away. I was just in total shock. How could this be happening? All of those people, not just in the towers, but the buildings surrounding them, all the firefighters and the New York Police Department. It was so hard to explain to the people in the room who had never been there, never seen that area on a busy weekday morning, just how catastrophic this event was. It was horrendous, and it was real, and we were seeing it unfold in front of us. The images are forever burned into my memory. To me, the New York skyline will never be the same. The missing towers will forever be a testament to all those who lost their lives and gave their lives that day. Karen from Kentucky Performance Products in Versailles, Kentucky.
My name is Amanda Wright, and I currently live in Manhattan, but at the time I lived in Medicine Lodge, Kansas. And actually, it's kind of funny because I was driving my Thunderbird out to our farm to feed my horse in the morning before school. When it came on the radio, and the radio station that I usually listen to often played pranks of that sort of nature, well, not that nature, but they were always doing some sort of shenanigans, and when I heard it, I just thought, oh, that's just really distasteful. Like, before they'd done a Godzilla attack on Tokyo and had played it out like it was very realistic and stuff. And so, you know, I got out of the car, I left it running and left the door open and was petting in my horse and feeding her in the morning and making sure she had clean water and everything, and I got back in the car, and I was driving to school because I was 17 at the time, and it was my senior year, and they just kept going and going, and I was just like, guys, it's not funny, please, just stop, you know, and I actually ended up turning the radio off. It was only that when I got to school that I went into my first class, and every classroom had all their TVs on, tuned to the same news station, and honestly, that's when my world changed forever, even though it was thousands of miles away. I did have friends in the area, and, you know, after speaking to them later that day, they, you know, one girl especially said she was, even though she was in New Jersey, she could, she had family in the area, you know, they saw it. It was quite devastating for everyone, and, you know, that's the way that we lived for the next month or over a month, and just every day I went to school, we didn't do anything but watch the news. Everything was absolutely put on a standstill, and for a graduation present, my family had planned a road trip to Virginia. And we made a site. We had planned to make a site stop in Washington, but we actually have photographs of the Pentagon with all the damage in it. And so it just sort of, it really struck home. It really changed a lot of things because we had already made these plans. We were already going to see these things, and now it just added a whole new aspect to it. And, you know, my sister was going on a missionary trip, but she had to go to New York, actually, to interview with the group. And, you know, her interview was in October. And so she actually got pictures of Ground Zero. She got to see it, and she said that all of the businesses were closed, and the smell of burning plastic and rotting human flesh was so completely overpowering that it was just unimaginable, and you could smell it for at least a 6-block radius. It was just all-consuming, and so it really drove home how sad it really all was, how real it really all was. I know so many people watched it on the news, but my family actually got to experience it in ways that a lot of people other didn't, and it's sad. It's devastating, and I pray to God, I hope that nothing like this ever happens again, and all of my hopes and wishes go out to the family members who lost their loved ones in that horrible, horrible attack, and I hope today that they are all strong and happy and healthy and moving on with their lives.
Well, we have Joseph here from Equity Manufacturing, and thank you so much for calling in today to talk to us about where you were on 9/11. First question is, where in the country were you on 9/11?
Actually, Glenn, at that particular time, I was over in Portugal.
Okay. Well, tell us how you heard. Where were you when you heard the news?
You know, it's a funny deal because 9/11. Most of the time when I talk to you, I'm very upbeat, and to this day I can still barely talk about 9/11 without profound sadness and a tremendous emotion. It was one of the happiest moments of my life was those particular days. I'd been married for a number of years, and my wife had given me a beautiful black Andalusian stallion, and we decided that one of the ways to get familiar with the horse was actually to do what Jamie did, which is to go over to Spain and Alcaínza, or up Spain in the Andalusian region, and ride horses. And we had gone to a tourist type training location, and I had had my first ride of the day, and I was sitting reading a book outside of the little room that we'd rented, and somebody came running over to me and said that a plane had crashed into a building in New York. And, you know, being a pilot, I thought, oh, some wayward 172 had strayed and flown into a building. And I go into the room where they have the live CNN feed. And I, like everybody, probably, you're just watching with absolute horror, fascination. I don't know how to describe it, as the smoke is billowing from the first building and nobody knows what's going on. And I don't know what it was like in the U.S. at that particular time, and I don't know what the news feeds were, but when you're in a foreign country and you're watching this, it felt incredibly vulnerable, which you just didn't have a sense that you really had any idea what was going on. And I remember watching this thing and then the second plane hitting and the disbelief that I felt at watching this and the quiet that was in the room, as none of us that are there quite knew how to comprehend what we were looking at. And then the building fell. And the thought of the thousands of people that were just instantaneously killed was incredibly profound. Still is. And after that was over, I remember walking around Lisbon or other places, and Portuguese people, recognizing that I was an American, would walk up and express their condolences for the country, for us as citizens of the country, that something so incredible would affect us. And it was the beginning and it was the end, I think, of this broad-based acceptance and admiration of America. I at that particular time, when I went to the airport, there was no way to get out of Portugal. The flights had all been canceled. You know, when I went into Portugal, there was so much happiness at the airport. And when I left, it was machine guns and it was security and it was fear. And, you know, it never recovered. It's never been the same in the times that I've been there since. I've had much, much different conversations with people in foreign countries. And so it's really, it was one of those moments that I know people have them about Kennedy and other things, where were you? But in my life, there's never been anything that has affected me as powerfully as that moment when the building fell.
Well, Joseph, you had a different perspective because you were in a foreign country. You were in Portugal. What was the attitude and was the shock as great with the Portuguese people as it was with us here?
Oh, well, I wasn't over here, but I can tell you everybody was stunned. It was absolutely, because, you know, it's hard to recall just how loved the USA was at that time. Everything was growing. The political situation was different. And so the feeling for Americans was really, really great. And when it happened, it was more just disbelief of why would somebody attack America? It was...
Plus, if a lot of them had traveled to the United States as tourists, one of the places they would have gone would have been New York. They would have seen those.
And I, once again, I wasn't over there. I couldn't call my wife. I couldn't get hold of anybody. The phone lines were clogged, and you didn't know whether it was the beginning of a war. I just can't describe how incredibly vulnerable and far away from my wife and home and no way to get back. You know, I remember even calling to cruise ships, trying to find some way to get back to the U.S. It was absolutely amazing.
Well, I'm here with Lisa from Chicago. Now, Lisa, where were you at 9/11 and when you heard the news?
Well, Glenn, I was at home. I mean, I got a phone call from my sister that woke me up, and you know, I turned on the TV and I just started watching. And at that point, you know, the first tower had been hit, but you know, they were still standing. And you know, I was I live on Chicago's far north side, and actually back then we lived in Evanston, which is the suburb immediately to the north of Chicago. But my partner, he works downtown in a skyscraper downtown Chicago, and so, you know, as all of this was unfolding and nobody knew what was going on and all of that, I mean, it just was really kind of nerve-wracking, because he works not too far from the Sears Tower, which is, you know, could be a big target. We just didn't know about that. And then my dad and stepmom were actually traveling, had flown out of state, and were traveling during that time. And they ended up having to, you know, get a rental car. And thankfully, they thought ahead, because, you know, and went ahead and did that, because had they waited, they might not have been able, they might have been stuck for weeks out of state and away from home. So, you know, just watching on the TV and just being so like sick to my stomach, you know, and just thinking about all the people affected and all the parents, you know, all the kids whose parents were working in those buildings. And my, you know, I have family members who, you know, are both in the, you know, police and firefighters and relatives who are, you know, so I know what that's like when your family members are going into dangerous situations. So there was just so many different, you know, different levels that, you know, even though I wasn't there, I just felt for all the people who were experiencing that.
Well, I have on that note, speaking of the kids, I have a tribute to the victims of 9/11. This is by Riley Roth. It's called Always in My Memory. And she was 2 when her dad died on 9/11 in New York. And now she sings. Oh. And I think she's like 10, I believe, when she sang this. And all the proceeds for this song are going to charities to help the children of 9/11. So let's take a listen to that.
About it, and I've always wondered why. Who were those men smiling in that shot? I've heard stories about the day the towers crashed and the fire they fought. My father was there that sad, sad day, and I never got in in his eye when he began to say, all these men had died together on this day. They did their call of duty as they helped save other lives. To those men who died that day, I know I'm not alone in honoring these men, and I know because of them we're much safer in our land.
I'm here with Tammy from the Western Radio Show, who has a little bit of a different perspective on where were you, Tammy, on 9/11 when you heard the news?
Where was I? I actually was in Texas, Glenn. I had actually came over from Perth, Western Australia in 1999. I went back to Perth for a little bit to visit, and I was coming back in 2000. So I'd really only been back in Texas about 12 months when 9/11 happened, and I was just kind of training cutting horses out at Lindy Birch's at Oxbow Ranch. And for those in the cutting industry in the Western world, they know how strict the Lindy's equestrian camp is. And there was nothing but you had to work. There was no anything else, you know. So I remember hearing, I don't know if I heard it in the radio. We normally keep the radio on in the indoor arena. And I went up to the apartment above the barn, and we turned the TV on, and I remember thinking, we should not be doing this. This is so against our work ethic. We work and we don't, you know, this is just against everything we're supposed to do. And although I'm Australian and I hadn't really been in Texas that long, I just remember sitting there, and we tied the horses up, and we thought, you know, we couldn't work. It wasn't important to us right at that time. So we just kind of just put everything on hold for the day and went up and just gathered around the TV in the barn there and just watched it unfold. And we were watching after the first hit on the first tower and remembered, you know, the second one. And I just thought, this is crazy. And I was thinking everything that was going to come after this. And I remember sitting there at the TV thinking, I'm going to look back on this day, and this day is going to be, you know, those days that's just going to stick in history. This is going to be one of those monumental days that no one ever forgets. And I guess even on the days that you're watching and you realize that and you're thinking that, you still don't remember the extent of how momentous that really is. But even though I am not American, you know, I almost think of myself as being American, because that's how wounded I felt and that's how hurt I felt by watching something like that. Because, you know, it's being American is one thing, but I think this was a blatant attack against humanity. This was just an act that one human being doesn't do to another. And I think for me, coming from Australia, we have different beliefs, we have different religion, we have a different way of looking at life, but the way I look at life, it doesn't matter what perspective you have, it doesn't matter what you believe in, it doesn't matter what you think. It's about respect. It's about respecting each other. It's about respecting life. And it's just about being kind to one another. And that was everything against that. So I think coming and being an Australian and looking at that day, it was so unhumanitarian, if that's a word. It was such an attack on your ethics as a person, you know. So that's probably the more of the perspective that I had at that time being Australian. In, you know, I remember my mother called me straight away, and
she didn't say, because it was late at night in Australia.
Yeah, she did. She called me, and she had no geographical knowledge of where they were in regard to Texas. And she's like, "Oh my gosh, are you okay?" I said, "Yeah, really. You know, it's a long way from where I'm at here in Texas." But she was very devastated. So news definitely traveled fast. So yeah, it was. It definitely got over there quick, and my brother had called me and chatted to me a little bit about it. They were pretty up to date of everything that had gone on, but yes, it was really hard for them over there without the knowledge of the states that I had over here. You know, when something like that happens, other things nothing's really important anymore. Right. How do you go on? The horse that has to be loped, you know, is to win the futurity is not important when. And it's hard for me, Glenn, because even, you know, not related to 911, but my father was killed by a drunk driver when I was 4 or 5 years old. And I can sit there, and if I'm driving for lunch and I see an ambulance go by, it gives me this sick pit in my stomach. And I look at that and I think, I know how much my life was changed by that one death, by my father dying when I was 4 or 5 years old. It's changed my life. I wouldn't be in Texas if he hadn't been killed by that person. I would be in Australia. My life would be so dramatically different. I would hate to even think. And I still consider myself very blessed for the life I have now, but it would be very different. So I look at those people that have lost those loved ones, either in a car accident that I'm seeing it unfold between my eyes, or when 911 happened, and I think, look at all those hundreds of thousands of people. And look at all the lives that would be changed in the way that my life was changed. And I think that's how I relate to it the most. And that's what hurts me the most, because I understand the pain of losing a loved one. And I see and I know firsthand the way that that can change someone's life. And I look at those people and I'm just sorry. You know, I'm sorry you have to endure those changes in your life. And not everyone has the strength to get through it in the best possible way, and I am sorry for that, you know, and that's probably the way I relate to it.
I live in Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, but 9/11, I was at work. Somebody heard on the radio there was an airplane heading for the tower, and everybody stopped dead and said, "What? This doesn't happen in this country." But it did. and somebody had a computer with a TV screen or a little TV screen, and we stood there and watched it over and over and over, and like, wow, who ever heard of such a thing? Later that day, I got a phone call from my daughter-in-law who said that her sister, who works in the Pentagon, was okay, but she and her secretary had just left her office when the plane hit, and her office was gone. Even stranger was the fact that her secretary's brother was in the North Tower and made it out. I got a call from my stepdaughter who said, we're okay. I was on my way to work, and this plane came and wiped out the Pentagon a block and a half from where I was. I went home. That's what happened that day with us.
I'm here with Dr. Tucker of the Equine Practice. And Dr. Tucker, where were you on 9/11 when you heard the news?
I had just flown in the day before into Newark Airport, and I was on the starboard side of the plane, and I looked out on the crystal clear blue skies of the autumn day, and I saw the World Trade Centers standing tall. And I said, yep, I'm back in New York. And it was quite a thrill. And to land there and work all day the day before the tragedy was just classic for New York. It was just an autumn day, and brought back so many childhood memories. And that night, I made my way over to New London, Connecticut, where I spent the night, and the next morning hopped on the ferry that took me across Long Island Sound. And that's where I was, somewhere on Long Island Sound, when this occurred, but I didn't know anything about it until my wife called me. And I was driving through the Hamptons when she said a plane had hit the towers. And I was on my way to several farms that day in the Hamptons of New York. And the first place I went to, everybody was in the office looking at the TV. And I just couldn't believe what I saw. It was surreal. And it was there that I saw the first tower collapse. And everybody was just silent in unsure of what was happening. It was really real. And I pretty much figured that I wasn't going to be able to do any work at that barn. And they said, just go. And it's really weird because when you travel all over the country and you're so set on a schedule to go from one farm to the next to get work done, that's the mode that you're in. And it hadn't hit me yet. And so I went to the next farm. And if anybody knows, has been to the Hamptons, there's a farm called Two Trees, which is just a huge place. And I'll never forget walking into the barn, and this is a world-class equestrian who had his horses there, and they were still in the cross ties, and it's like a ghost town. There's nobody there. And so I hunted around and found a small outbuilding where everybody had gone, all the grooms, the trainers, everybody, and they're in watching, and I saw the second tower collapse. And it started to hit home, and I'm getting goosebumps just now just thinking about it. And I wondered how I was going to get off of Long Island, because the only way west is through New York City, which I thought was under invasion at the time. So I made my way back to the ferry, and the ferry was clear. I thought everybody was going to be evacuating Long Island. I didn't know what to think. But I got on the ferry, and I got back into Connecticut, and I didn't know where to go. And I wandered around, and next thing you knew, I was in Saratoga Springs at the Holiday Inn, where I sat at the end of the bed and stared at the TV all night, just replaying and watching this thing. I figured I had like 70 horses that I could work on the next day at Saratoga Springs. They would have no problems with me working there. But I was just devastated. On top of this, I needed to get home, and I couldn't because I had a rental car, and it was going to cost me over $4,000 to return it to Florida. And the next day, a full-page ad in USA Today said, you guys need to be home. And budget pretty much forgave anybody that said, just drive wherever you need to be with your family, and we won't charge you any extra. So I ended up driving south down I-81, and I'm in Virginia, and I'm still numb. I'm still in disbelief. When a client from Florida called and says, hey, can you do my two horses? I said, well, yeah. She said, but wait a minute, there's a catch. My horse is now in Winchester, Virginia. And I just started laughing. I said, oh, I can be there in 30 minutes. Who would have thought? But it was that little break that I needed just to come back to reality and say, oh, my gosh, this is devastating. I can't even put into words what was going on. And for the next year, I heard story after story of people who had either been at the trade centers, saw it happen, looked out the window and had it happen, knew people who had died in there that they had worked with, but they had left a year earlier to become horse trainers. And the devastation of these people's minds for over a year was just indescribable. And even to today, when you think about the tragedy that occurred, and not just there, but every time I go through Pennsylvania and every time I pass the Pentagon in my travels, I just think of this day and how it was a turning point for all of us. It didn't matter if we like horses or not, or where we sit on the political aisle. It was just, it strengthened our resolve to stand for freedom. And that's where I am. And that's why I still travel all over the country, embracing the principles of America. Because those people who died, I'm not going to let them die in vain. I'm going to go out there and continue the American spirit because of them.
Well, hi, Reese from the Dressage Radio Show. Thank you so much for joining us today. Hey, Reese, where were you on 9/11 when you heard the news?
Well, Glenn, I was actually in the barn. I was in the barn with my mom, who, you know, I'm really close to my mom, and we were actually doing stalls and getting ready. I was getting ready to ride. I was literally, like, going to put a bridle on my horse. And my mom always complained to me about the radio station that I chose. I don't know if that's other people's problems in the barn, but my mom likes classical, and I didn't like classical. So she literally was just fussing with me about the radio show, the program I was listening to. And I was going to change the radio station, and I was literally at the radio when I heard the news. And, you know, I was in there, my mom was in there, and actually our plumber, Bill, was in there. And we literally all stopped and just, we didn't know what to do. We just stopped and, yeah, just listened to the radio. And at that point, I decided that we should probably go in the house and turn on the radio and or turn on the TV. And we did. I unpacked my horse quickly, and Mom, Bill, and I all walked into the house. And we just sat there stunned and just really didn't know what to do. And I called Travis, who is my now husband. At the time, we were dating, and he was in Seattle. And so I knew he wasn't up. So I called him, and his roommate that I'm close to picked up the phone, and I said, hey, you need to wake everybody up and listen, you know, look at the radio, you know, look at the TV or the radio. So it was a morning that we all just kind of sat there, and we sat there for, oh gosh, I don't even remember, 2 or 3 hours. And finally, you know, I got up, and I don't think I rode any horses that day. I think just like everyone else, we were all just stunned. And then I remember I had to do a clinic in St. Louis that weekend coming up, and I had to fly. And they called me and they said, you know, what do you want to do? Do you want to come do the clinic? And it was a short flight from Lexington to St. Louis. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go. I said, you know, I can't stay home. I don't really want to drive 7 hours to the clinic. So I'm going to fly. And I did. I flew, that weekend. And I think I was in the plane with one other person. In the clinic, they were so thankful that I came. And one of my riders said, you know, you were so brave to get on the plane. And I think my response to her was, life has to go back to normal. You know, we can't let this kind of change our, I mean, it is going to change our lives, but we need to continue for all the people that were lost.
I am here with Julie Broadway, who was living in North Carolina at the time. Julie, what do you remember about 9/11, and where were you when you heard the news?
Well, Glenn, it's an interesting story. I had gone to a conference in Quebec City. I had traveled up a couple of days before the conference actually began. At the time, my fiance had gone with me, and he had just flown back to Raleigh, North Carolina, as the conference was beginning. The first day of the conference, we were attending a number of sessions, and word was starting to trickle out that something was happening in New York. And the conference organizers decided that they wanted to keep everyone well informed of what the events were. And so they actually used the large screens they had set up in the main convention space to televise all of the news And we were, it was surreal because we were actually watching the towers burn, and we were watching as things were unfolding on this large screen. It looked like a movie, a terror movie. And people were talking amongst themselves. People were trying very hard to contact family to find out if they were okay, to let them know that we were okay in Quebec City. And just a lot of emotion and anxiety. Everyone was very concerned about what was going on back home and how they were going to get home. And that was the second part of the equation. Once the reality of the situation kind of sunk in and we began to accept the events that we were seeing on this huge screen, we all began to think, now what? And immediately people started trying to get a flight home, and of course they couldn't do that. And they tried to rent a car, and they had closed the borders between Canada and the U.S. at the time. And so they couldn't rent a car to get home. And everyone was just anxious about how they were going to get back to their loved ones. It was very emotional for everybody that was there. And a lot of people tried a lot of different avenues to get home. And in my particular case, I was stuck there for a couple of extra days. And finally, one of the companies that was based in Raleigh, North Carolina, chartered a bus. And the bus drove from North Carolina all the way to Quebec City.
Wow.
And they loaded everybody in the bus that they could hold that was anywhere on the route between there and North Carolina and put us all on the bus. It was a long journey home. And they stopped frequently and let people off the bus at just little intersections where their family could come and pick them up wherever they could find along the route. My thoughts are with everyone as we remember this big event.
Thank you for listening, and let's never forget.
An airplane has hit the World Trade Center, and that's all we know.
Today, we've had a national tragedy.
American Airlines Flight 11 departed Boston for Los Angeles.
Two airplanes have crashed into the World Trade Center.
World Trade Center has been one of their missions.
We heard a big bang, and then we saw smoke coming out, and everybody started running out. We saw the plane on the other side of the building, and there was smoke everywhere. People were jumping out the window.
And now, if you join me in a moment of silence. Thank you very much. May God bless the victims, their families, and America.
Violence has spread worldwide, and there's families on the street.
People running, their hair on fire. People were jumping out of the World Trade Center. Jumping out, because they don't know what to do.
But all we do is eliminate our future. The things we do today. Money is our incentive now, so that makes it okay. I believe love is the answer. I believe love will find a way. I believe love is the answer. I believe love will find a way.
It's been reported that my brother John was the captain of American Airlines Flight 11, which was hijacked out of Logan Airport. I keep looking at the cornfield behind me, hoping that my brother comes walking on out.
People were on those planes that just began their lives like children.
My children are only 5 and 8 years old. They think mommy's still at work. If anyone sees them, please call us. Please look at the picture and call me. Thank you.
Walk blindly to the light and reach out for his hand. Don't ask any questions and don't try to understand. Open up your mind and then open up your heart. And you see that you and me are
I don't see you again.
let you all know that I love you very, very much.